Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend. Along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew, I'm of course William Ramo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Yeah, what's up? How's it going?
I'm doing okay, man. You know, glad to do this show with you, as always.
Yeah, likewise.
Thanks again, man. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you wanna talk sports entertainment, you're at the right place. On today's show, you know, we'll talk about the Kobe Bryant Memorial, the latest hot, spring training news with the Mets and the Yankees, and even this ongoing Astros saga. We'll talk about the Knicks after their big win against the Bulls. And then, of course, you know, we're going to talk about the Brady possibly going to the Giants and leaving the Patriots. What my thoughts on that, and last but not least, give you our thoughts about all the big news that went down in at the Super Showdown on Thursday. But most importantly, the number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics and more. We'd love to hear from you. But without further ado, let's talk about, the big news that happened in the sports world. And, of course, you know, the sports world, you know, they paid their respects to one of the greatest players of all time who was gone way too soon, you know. And of course, I'm talking about Kobe Bryant. And you know, they had the memorial for him and his daughter Gianna. And it was a touching tribute for a man who impacted the sports and entertainment world in a 2-decade span. And you know, all the his peers like Jordan, Shaq. I mean, the list goes on. You know, they all paid their respect, you know, at the Staples Center, the place that Kobe called home, you know, since the, you know, the late 90s.
Yep.
And, you know, everybody, there was a bunch of touching speeches like Jordan and, you know, of course, most notably, his widow Vanessa. But you know, it was a I didn't see the whole thing. I saw the highlights, or you know, I mean, I guess you can't even really call it highlights. The main points of the speeches, and it was a rightful tribute to you know a man who impacted, you know, the city of L.A. and the whole entire world. So, again, my thoughts and prayers, you know, go out to Vanessa, you know, his parents and, you know, Kobe's daughters and everybody else who's been directly affected by his tragedy, you know, his daughter's tragedy and all the other, you know, victims of, you know, the horrible crash.
Yeah, it was a very beautiful memorial / ceremony. You had Michael Jordan, Shaq there giving speeches, Diane Taurasi,
mm-hmm.
Of course his wife Vanessa. Yeah, it's very touching, beautiful ceremony. I thought Michael Jordan gave the best speech of the night. You know, about reflecting on his conversations with Kobe Bryant and how Kobe used to always bother him by texting him at night in late hours. Yeah, Jordan had a lot of tears. I never seen Jordan cry that much, you know. And
Yeah.
he even said that he told his wife, you know, before the ceremony that he would try not to cry so that way he wouldn't see another Jordan meme for the next several years. But he did end up crying a lot, and yeah, I just hope that people won't use that as a meme, you know, because that would be very, you know,
Tasteless.
tasteless. Yeah. So. But yeah, it was a beautiful ceremony, very touching.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with you, man. And the celebration, you know, and tribute to Kobe, man, it's gonna go on for at least this year, you know, because the Lakers, they're one of the best teams in basketball, if not the best team. You know, of course, the Bucks, you know, the Lakers and the Bucks are most likely gonna battle it out for the finals. But you know, and not to mention, you know, Kobe dying at such a young age, you know. At least he was 41 when he passed. So yeah, he's gonna continue to be for a very long time. Not to mention the
All
Star game, you know, they award the winner the Kobe Bryant Trophy. So, and then of course, you know, he's going into the Hall of Fame posthumously. So, you know, this is not going to be the last we hear about, you know, the you know, much deserved tributes this year. So, again, my condolences.
Okay, rest in peace, Kobe, Gigi, and the other victims in that crash. Kobe.
You know, shifting gears to the Knicks, and Knicks finally got a victory. You know, against the Bulls, their former rivals, when Jordan, the aforementioned Michael Jordan, terrorized us, you know, on the basketball court, most notably the 55-point game a long, long time ago. I think it was 95 when he scored 55 points in a playoff game, even though he had the flu.
Not the coronavirus.
Yeah, not the coronavirus. Even though it wouldn't stop him, even if he did back in those days.
Yeah.
They would kill us, man. My goodness. Goodness. I'm still having nightmares with him and Reggie Miller torching us in the worst possible ways.
Yeah, well.
My goodness. But
the Knicks won today?
Yeah, they won today. I think it was, 125-111 or something. Something to that point. Mitchell Robinson had his best game. He had 23 points. 10 rebounds, I think, the two block shots. RJ Barrett, I think he had 19 points. Kevin Knox, you know, he came out of the witness protection agency and he scored like 12 points, you know. And that was like a few days after his father was giving us a warning that, you know, the best is yet to come for his son. Kevin Knox Sr., he played for the you know, the Buffalo Bills back in the days. So, you know,
okay.
he's an athlete. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I tend to agree with his father. You know, I think you can't sleep on Kevin Knox, man. I think he has talent. Will he be a superstar? I don't know about that. But a star, at least an all-star? Yes, I definitely think he has that potential. And there's rumors that said that Knicks were reluctant to trading him, you know, before the trading deadline. And
yeah.
I think that was a smart move because I think you need to build around Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett, and definitely Kevin Knox for sure.
Yeah, Knox has a lot of talent, you know, but I don't know if he'll ever be a superstar, but.
No.
He'll definitely be a guy that you could, you know, rely on coming off the bench.
That's possible. I still think he has a ceiling. He has the ceiling to be an all-star.
Possibly.
Possibly.
We'll see.
A two-time all-star, that's pushing it. But I think he could make it as an all-star. But then again, he has to have the right coach, you know, using his talent. You know, whether it's Miller or I would assume Thibodeau. You know, Thibodeau has the rumors, he has a 90% chance of coaching the Knicks. Of course, Thibodeau was a former Knicks assistant under Van Gundy during those Knicks heydays, you know, when they were battling Jordan's, Bulls and the Heat. This was the Michael Jordan day, man. This is like the third time in the show already I'm mentioning Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan should pay you.
He should pay you. This show has been sponsored by the Charlotte Hornets. But yeah, he definitely should. And especially for all the grief he's put me through. He should put me in therapy and pay for my bills. Shoot. But Thibodeau has a 90% chance of being the next Knicks coach, you know,
yep.
If they do fire Mike Miller.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, to his credit, the Knicks have improved under his watch. I mean, it's not saying much because the Knicks are like 20 games under 500. So
right.
But yeah, they had a good games from the players today. You know, Randall had like I think 23 points as well, 10 rebounds, and Randall, you know, he was in a few days ago because he got benched for Bobby Portis in the fourth quarter a few days ago. And usually Randall's the first guy to, do interviews.
Right.
But, you know, he left early that game because he wasn't happy, I guess, with the direction of his playing time. But, Randall, he's the only guy on the team other than the young guys we got, you know, that's going to be – you know, part of the team for at least the next 2 years after this year, you know, barring a blockbuster trade. So, Randall definitely, you know, he's definitely a player that they gotta, you know, make sure he cannot alienate.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I like Randall, you know. A lot of people are, you know, are down on him, but I think he has potential. He just has to limit the turnovers. That's the only thing.
Amen to that. He literally needs Randall needs to work on his ball handle. You know?
Yeah.
You know, he is turnover prone, but he is a very talented guy for sure. I mean,
he is.
No doubt about that. I mean, you know what you could say? He could probably be like Zach Randolph, you know, a guy who's underrated, who scores. But, I mean, if you're going to have a championship team, he can't be the the lead scorer, even though that's what he basically is with the Knicks, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Barrett can definitely be an all-star. But
oh, yeah.
He has some improving to do.
Yeah, definitely. RJ Barrett got the potential to be a multiple-time All-Star.
Yeah.
You know? And if he reaches his potential, he could be a perennial All-Star. But,
yeah,
you know, we'll see how he develops, you know, this year. But I'm trying to think. But, we'll see what happens with the – you know, with the Knicks. Oh, because apparently in a few days, they're going to make it official that Leon Rose will be the next president of basketball operations for the Knicks, you know, replacing Steve Mills. And person who endorses it was you know, of course, our leading scorer and, you know, our best leading scorer in modern day history. And that's Carmelo Anthony. You know, he was Carmelo Anthony's agent, you know, when, you know, he was, you know, a super agent in the league. So Carmelo Anthony endorses the deal, and now there's rumors that say that maybe Melo might come back, you know, next year to come to the Knicks, because there was a rumor that he was going to, before he signed with the Portland Trail Blazers, and he's doing a good job with the Trail Blazers. I think he might even score 30 points recently too. But there was rumors before he signed with the Portland Trail Blazers that he was going to re-sign with the Knicks if the Knicks, you know, big plans of getting Durant and Kyrie Irving would have came to fruition, which, you know, of course, as we all know, it hasn't worked out for the Nets because Kyrie Irving has still proven to be injury prone. And of course, we all knew from the get-go Durant had his first major injury in the you know, before the NBA Finals, and of course during the NBA Finals, which basically sealed his fate with the Golden State Warriors. And that team still hasn't rebounded from his departure, and Klay Thompson's departure, and even Curry's injuries as well. So
yeah,
Warriors is you know, they're arguably the worst team in the league right now, which is shocking. You know, but that's what injuries do to you.
Yep.
But shifting gears, baseball. Speaking of injuries, Luis Severino, your boy, he's injured, man. He's gonna be gone for the rest of the year again. And that's a big, big blow for the Yankees, man. And this proves why them signing Gerrit Cole was even more important, because, you know, not only did they wanted an ace of Gerrit Cole's caliber to add to their rotation, but with Severino being hurt, it, you know, it really proves that it was a necessity that they got a guy of Gerrit Cole's ability, a guy who potentially could be the best pitcher in baseball if the man known as Jacob DeGrom didn't exist. But we shall see.
Yeah, this injury does suck big time, because, you know, expecting to have Severino back, but, you know, sounds like he's been dealing with this shoulder soreness since the playoffs. And so I don't know why he waited so long to now finally decide to let people know. And now he has to have Tommy John surgery because of it. So he's going to miss the season. Fortunately for the Yankees, you know, they have Severino missing the season. You know, they do have Jordan Montgomery back. And I think Montgomery being in the rotation this year is going to help us significantly, because when he pitched a couple years ago, he looked really good. Looked really good, and he had a great outing today in spring training, I saw. So I think he can be an X factor, you know. Once we also get Paxton back, who's also been battling an injury, he'll probably be back in June, probably around the same time that Domingo Herman comes back from his suspension. I think this rotation should be fine. You know, right now we got Cole, we got Tanaka, we got Hap. You know, if Hap gives us, you know, the bit, even if he gives us 50% of the Hap that we got from Toronto, that will be good enough. You know, so having Montgomery, you know, as a fourth starter, I think that's going to be that's going to be a big benefit to the Yankees. You know, he's healthy this year. Hopefully he doesn't get injured, and hopefully we are stabilized until, you know, Paxton comes back and Herman comes back later in the year. But it is a big blow that Severino is going to be out, but I think the Yankees will survive. I mean, look at last year. They had all, you know, all those injuries, still managed to win 100 games and almost go to the World Series. So we'll see.
I mean, you're absolutely right, man. I mean, they had a lot of guys come up, Voit, Urshela, and then, you know, you guys got the starting pitching. You know, you got the young guys, Montgomery, Delvey Cruz, Loaiza. You know, you guys have some, you know, some depth.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was Garrett Cole. And you guys wanted to run out J.A. Happ out of town, but now you guys are glad that you got the Happ app, you know, because
yeah.
Stuff happens, you know. So now you got that veteran guy, you know, in the rotation. He's still in the rotation. He didn't get traded. And, you know, you guys are going to be fine, you know.
Yeah, I think we should do okay.
And if you guys need to make a move to improve the team, you guys always have the resources to acquire that talent, whether it's free agency or you know, through a trade. So you guys are in good shape.
Yep. I think we should be fine.
And then you switch gears with the Mets, and you know, they're basically playing through spring training. Edwin Diaz, his first outing in spring training didn't look good. Gave up 2 runs. I mean that's spring training, but the way how this guy, you know, he's like the $6 million man. You know, they have the tools to rebuild them, Pedro and you know, work on his mechanics and all this stuff. You know, like, you know, this guy is supposed to have a bounce back year if the Mets are going to, you know, have any semblance of living up to their potential. You know, because last year they finished 3 games out of the second wild card, and I believe this to this day. I've been saying on this show all year long last year that if they didn't have that bullpen, and even more importantly, if they didn't have Mickey Callaway as the manager mismanaging the bullpen, they would have been a playoff team. I have no doubt in my mind about that. What's done is done. Familia had his worst year, and Diaz had his worst year. And those are the two top relievers that they had, you know, on paper.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. Diaz had the resume for Mariners. And if Familia, I mean, he's one of the one of the best Mets closers of all time, you know. And unfortunately, you know, Familia hasn't had a worser outing since the 2015 World Series, you know. So Familia, he needs to bounce back, you know. I have cautious confidence that they could bounce back, but Diaz, I don't know, man. I believe Familia could bounce back more than Diaz, and Diaz is who they need the most. So they really need those guys. And then, you know, you got Lugo, who was arguably their best reliever last year. He had a pinky toe injury. So that's going to send him back in spring training. And last year he couldn't go back to pitch back-to-back games, which is a necessity when you're a reliever. So, you know the Mets have the pitching depth, you know, but they got a 3-man battle for the fifth rotation, you know, for the, you know, the fourth and fifth spot. You know, of course, you know, they got DeGrom. They got Syndergaard. They got Stroman, who pitched well in spring training. I'm trying to think. And then you got three men battling for two spots of the rotation. You have Matz, who deserves the spot because he's pitched well these last 2 years. He actually stayed healthy after years of being injury prone. And then you got Porcello, who, in my most humble opinion, should be the fifth starter. And then you have Michael Wacha, who used to be, you know, a great pitcher, you know, on the Cardinals staff, so most notably in 2013. But in my opinion, this guy should be going to the bullpen, being a, you know, a six man, occasional six man rotation, you know, possibility, because they don't owe Michael Wacha nothing, man. Michael Wacha, man, he could go back to the Muppets and be a you know, what's his name, Fozzie Soundbite, man, you know, catchphrase, because Michael Wacha hasn't done nothing for the Mets, man. He needs to fall back. You know, either he accept this role as a, I know they said he has the potential to be a starter, because as of right now, all three of these guys want to be starters. You know, Porcello, I mean, they gave him $10 million. Obviously, he's a starter, and his resume backs it up, even though he had a horrible 2019 year. Matz, you know, the last 2 years, he's finally lived up to his potential as, you know, that lefty that we have in the rotation. A guy I've always believed in, you know, since he debuted with the Mets, growing up a Mets fan in Long Island, his grandpa, you know, cheering him on in the stands. He's also a huge Mets fan. And Matz, man, ability to hit as a pitcher. You know, you can't forget that. That's a very important part of the game, which obviously, you know, the commissioner wants to get rid of that, because as early as next year, the DH might be universal, which I'm not a fan of it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love interleague play. You know, I like the ability to sometimes play interleague and play the DH occasionally, you know. But as a National League and a baseball purist, I think the league should stay, you know, unique. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know what I mean? I think that it should stay, you know, the National League should have the pitchers hit.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, or have the option of, you know, maybe if they want to make it modernized, they can have both National League managers agree before the game whether they want to use the DH or not, if that's what they want to do. If they're so hell-bent on having the DH in the National League, you know, that would be the compromise. But I don't think, you know, having the DH rule shoved down the throats of the National League managers is the best way to do it. But what do I know? I'm just a fan. So,
well, you know, man. Then again, hey, you know, I know you're, you know, you want to stick with the traditional thing, you know, sticking with the DH, with the no DH, having the pitchers hit. But again, this is 2020. This is not 1820. This is not 1920. You know, pitchers, if they can't hit, what's the point of having them in the lineup? And there's no strategy in that. Don't you want to go against the best hitters? Don't you want your pitcher to face the best hitters? Right? So add the DH, if that's the case. You know, and then you'd match up well with the AL. A lot of times the NL, they don't match up well with the AL because of that reason, because they have the pitcher hitting or batting in the pitcher batting in the lineup. You know, it doesn't make any sense. The pitcher 90% of the time is automatic out. So I don't get why you wouldn't want to use the DH. I mean, it just makes more sense. I mean, you get more hitting in the National League. I mean, forget strategy. I mean,
you could strategize without having the pinch hitter for the pitcher. You know, I don't get it. Explain that to me.
Okay, I'll try to do my best. The National League, I mean, obviously, other than it's been
aside,
like
I mean, aside from you being a purist and want to stick with what benefit does it have continuing to go this way? Aside from keeping the tradition.
The strategy is that, you know, when you're going against the other team's ace or your ace is throwing well, you have that dilemma whether or not you want to take your guy out of the game, you know, for offense, or you keep your ace in to try to, you know, potentially throw a heroic game. You know what I mean?
Well, but you could do that without that anyway. You could keep your pitcher in the game without even doing that.
Yeah, but if you don't, but with the DH, you don't have the there's no pressure for you to take out your pitcher. Your pitcher could pitch the whole game if he wanted to.
Right, exactly.
Because there's no strategy of taking him out of the game. Because let's say your guy is, you know, throwing seven strong innings, and you know, one run ball, but you need that offense. So what's the dilemma? You either keep your pitcher in the game and hope your guy who's like you said, is usually 90% of the time, maybe 90 to 95% of the time, automatic out.
Right.
You have the option of keeping your pitcher in the game because he is your best option for you to win. Or you go for offense and go to the pen, and you hope that you have a good to validate that move. So, without the DH rule, you don't have to make that option because you could just throw your pitcher out there, and basically you don't even have to use your bullpen or bring in your spark plug, you know, scrappy base hitter, you know, a pinch hitter off the bench, because essentially you're going to have, you could put your that guy to play off the whole game, because since he's a defensive liability, you could have him start the game or have your star player who's injured or aging plays a DH, so you don't even really pinch hitter, to be honest.
It still doesn't make sense, because if you have the DH in a game at the beginning of the game, you don't have to worry about putting offense at the end of the game. You won't have to worry about that.
That's my point. You don't have to worry about it, because there's no strategy, because you don't have to worry about taking your best starter out, because there's no strategy.
Exactly. So you're making my point.
The American League.
My point
is there's no strategy in the American League. All you got to do is just put your best nine hitters out there and just sit down and kick up your shoes and relax your feet and just rest on a hammock and see your guys score nine runs and go home 5 hours later.
But that's the whole point. That's the whole point of the game. The whole point is to score to win, right? With the pitcher thing, you could keep your pitcher regardless. There's no strategy in that. You keep him for the entirety of the game, depending on how he's pitching. There's no strategy in that with the keeping the having the pinch hitter come up to bat for him. I mean, that's an entirely different thing. You know, you could have the DH, you know, hitting and keep your pitcher in the game at the same time. The only strategy is going to be the bullpen. You know, what guys are going to be using, you know, to replace the pitcher once he tires out. I mean, that's the only strategy really that you need to think about. But other than that, I mean, you won't even have to worry about offense near the end of the game, if you already have the DH in there from the get-go. I mean, I don't get it. So, I mean, there's little strategy involved right now in the National League, to be honest, right?
What?
There's little strategy in the National League right now, even with the pitcher hitting.
What do you? I mean, this strategy the whole game. There's double switches. There's base runners. I mean, you have to worry more so about that in the National League. Bunting, you know what I mean? You guys don't have to suicide squeeze.
Players should know how to bunt anyway. I mean, that shouldn't be something that should be a strategy. Players should automatically know how to bunt and base run and do stuff.
Well,
if you need to get someone off the bench to do that, then that's on the players.
Well, tell that to the Met players, because they don't allow them to know how to bunt for their games,
that, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Especially pitchers.
You're going to do a double switch because this player could run better and this player could is better in defense. I mean, the players that are starting should already know how to do that. You know?
I mean, I agree with that aspect, but, I mean, you should have options. You know what I mean? I'm all for having options, you know, but...
You could still have options. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the DH, you could substitute the DH. The DH is not, automatic to stay in the game. You know, I've seen, like, games where, the DH gets swapped out for a player off the bench.
Well, yeah.
Or the DH gets moved to first base, and then they bring in another player off the bench. So you could still use strategy in those cases, but, tell me that, you're going to be doing double switching because the player is better defensively or better off of this. That's not a good excuse, Because these players that are starting should already know how to do those things.
I agree. But DHs, most of the time, they don't have a glove. They just hit first and they play defense eventually.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The DH, you could still swap out the DH. The DH is pretty much a pinch hitter that's starting throughout the whole game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly.
So you could still swap. You could still bring in a. You could still switch him with someone that could play defense.
Well, of course.
If that's the case.
But then you're gonna sacrifice your offense.
Well, there are times where you could move, a lot of DHs play first base sometimes.
Well,
so a lot of times you could move the DH, if he's good defensive, you can move him to first base, and then you could bring a guy off the bench who can hit or field. It depends. It depends. But I think you could still use strategy. That excuse is that, removing the hitter is going to remove strategy at all. I think that's a little bit off. It's a little bit BS there. I don't know.
Yeah, but you won't have to worry. In the American League, you don't have to worry about taking your pitcher out. You know what I mean? You just leave your pitcher in. I mean, unless if he tires, that's the only strategy you take on.
Shouldn't that be a good thing? If he's pitching good, you should leave him in.
Well, of course. I agree with that. But, you should – you know what I mean? A pitcher should be rewarded for his, him pitching well,
Right.
There should be that option that should I keep my guy in there or should I go for the offense? There should be that strategy. I mean, don't get me wrong. That's why I like interleague, sometimes, you could play a aging player or a player that's hurt, make him DH, and you don't have to worry about it. It makes it unique. But when you have to do it all the time, you prevent the chances of, the pitchers of getting, their first major league hit or and stuff like that. I think pitchers should be able to hit,
But a lot of them can't hit. That's the thing. That's the problem. a lot of them are easy outs. If they could hit, then you could make a good argument for it. But a lot of times these pitchers are bunting. They're just swinging at nothing, or they're not swinging at all. I mean, a lot of people say baseball is boring. Watching the pitchers hit, that's boring enough.
Well, what about going to the bullpen all the time, man? That's boring too, because these bullpen people can't pitch no more. Like, they just pitch, have four or five relievers in one inning. But if you have a starting pitcher who can go deep, as a strategy, and you have to worry whether or not you have to take him out of the game or keep him in the game, depending on how your offense is doing. That's a strategy that, the American League doesn't really have to deal with on a bigger level.
Yeah, I mean, don't you want it to be a little bit easier, a little complex? I mean,
I mean, as I'm just saying, like, there should be options, you know?
You know, I don't get it. I don't get it.
I guess we'll just agree to disagree, man. let's move on to the, you know, what you would call it, the rumor about Tom Brady leaving the Patriots and possibly signing with your Giants. Well,
oh, no,
I mean,
that's not going to happen. Never.
Well, you stole the words from my mouth, you know. That's not going to happen. I mean, if he does leave the Patriots, which I strongly doubt he won't. I mean, I strongly doubt that he would. That is the only team I could foresee him going to, in all honesty. But
Giants?
Do I think, yeah, out of all the teams, you
nah.
know, Tennessee Titans, and I forgot what other team they might have said. But yeah, I don't see him leaving the Patriots. It doesn't make any sense for him, you know, being, you know, at least 40 years old and, you know, going to another team, signing a big contract, you know, might I add, and, you know, to try to prove that he could still play and he could play without Belichick. I mean, there's no point. He should just play it safe, you know, in his career in, you know, in New England, or just retire. There's nothing for him to prove. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I agree with you.
Just
I
relax.
Mean,
chill.
I agree. There's nothing for him to prove. I mean, he's won, what, six championships?
Six
right?
championships. Mm-hmm. Most of anybody.
Yeah.
Like, relax.
And you have a fine wife at home, you know, ready to, you know, take a pounding, you know, so... Yeah, man, just go home, pound your wife, and sit back, relax, enjoy your millions, and retire. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, he should just, you know, retire, man, and give the Jets a chance of winning the division for a change. You know, about time, man. But geez,
yeah.
he's not gonna do it. But if I do see him leaving, Giants would be the only team that I could see him signing with. You know, it would be like, you know, it'd be like a script. You know, the team that prevented him from winning two titles, and he's essentially replacing the guy who kicked his butt in two Super Bowls. I mean, it's comical. I mean, you can't write this stuff up, but if you were, you would. That would be how he would end up if he would ever leave the Patriots, which to me makes no sense.
Again, I don't see it happening, but we'll see.
Okay, here's another question before we move on to WWE. What would if you were Gettleman, would you sign Tom Brady or would you stick with Daniel Jones?
I'd stick with Daniel Jones, to be honest, you know. Let the kid grow. Let him mature, let him, you know, let him play. You know, don't – he was just a backup for Eli Manning for the start of the season. Now he's going to have to back up Tom Brady now? Doesn't make any sense. And Tom Brady's 4 years old, man. And last year, he didn't have a great year. You know, you could start – you're starting to see him decline a little bit now. So I'm not – I don't think I would want Tom Brady on my team. Sorry.
I hear you.
I mean, you're in the same situation. Would you want Tom Brady on the Jets?
Would I want Tom Brady on the Jets? Yeah, he's too up there. I mean, it would be interesting to see him wearing, you know, wearing the uniform of his rival team, but it'd be like having Derek Jeter playing for the Mets, man. I can't have a guy who terrorized my team for 20-something years.
Right.
Come on my team, man. You better win me a title if that's the case. But other than that, I'm going to say, nah, I'm good. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Plus the agent, you know, he's aging. You know, he's not the same guy. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
If he still had it, and if they didn't have Darnold, you know, I'd say, okay, fine. Let's steal the Patriots. Let's steal Brady from the Patriots. But in this day and age, you got Darnold. You know, he's the future. I mean, will he live up to Brady's, you know, resume? No. But if he wins one title, I mean, that's more than enough than any Jet fans can ask for, especially fans who weren't alive to see Joe Namath win one.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, you know, you stick with Darnold, you stick with the plan, and that's what, you know, I assume the Giants will do too. But if Tom Brady is, it's kind of like Durant. It's going to be hard for you to say no to a future Hall of Famer who wants to come to your team.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. But, yeah, with the Jets, they're rumored to keeping Bell, you know, and, you know, re-signing Adams, you know, because he had a great year with the Jets. So, you know, hopefully Joe Douglas in this upcoming draft, you know, can improve this team, you know, because this is his first year as, you know, as a GM, you know, going into the draft. Because if you remember, Mike McCann got fired 4 months, I think, after they hired Adam Gase, which basically the guy, Mike McCagnan, hired the guy, which was Adam Gase, the head coach, who essentially got him kicked him out of his job, and then got Joe Douglas to be the GM. So this is Douglas's first draft as the Jets GM. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But lastly, WWE. And, yeah, man, it was a crazy pay-per-view event, to say the least. You had the – and I haven't even seen the whole thing yet. I only saw, like, the ending of the Battle Royale match, which AJ Styles won. R-Truth apparently did well. He defeated a few people in the Battle Royale. And then Styles looked like he was going to win, because he had his OC members, Anderson and Gallows, beat up Rey Mysterio. And then they showed footage backstage of, you know, Undertaker's boots and, you know, the bottom of his trench coat, you know, showing that he beat up the OC, you know, off camera. And then, of course, the iconic gong went on. And then, of course, it took the Undertaker a half hour to get to the ring. And then AJ Styles basically tried to attack him, but, you know, Undertaker countered and chokeslammed them and won the Battle Royale trophy.
Trophy?
Yeah, something like that, the Battle Royale, which, I mean, he didn't even qualify for the bat. So was it an open chat? Because they had six people. So
yeah.
Because they attacked Rey Mysterio, and he walked on. I mean, he is the Undertaker. You know, you could change the rules for him. You know, but he didn't even qualify for the match. But he just chokeslam him and pins him and win the title, the award that, I mean, I'm pretty sure Undertaker never, you know, in a million years thought this would be an accolade that he would dream of. This was never part of his boyhood dream in Death Valley to win this prestigious award. But nevertheless, he got the award. Let me see what else happened. The New Day lost to Miz and Morrison. I think,
yep.
I did predict that. Let me see what else.
Angel Garza defeated Humberto
Carrillo. You know, apparently his cousin. I'm assuming in real life as well, but yeah, that's his cousin. No surprise there. I'm trying to think what other matches was there.
Mansoor defeated Dolph Ziggler.
No surprise there. I think he's from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And, you know, hometown guy. Normally, hometown people lose in their hometown. But since he's facing Dolph Ziggler, who, you know, Dolph Ziggler, he finds amazing ways to lose. You know, that's no surprise he lost. Let me see what else matches was there.
The OC defeated Viking Raiders.
Yeah, those guys, they were due for a victory.
Yeah.
They're the best tag team. The late time, the last time they won was probably the cup in the Saudi Arabia. The last time they won the world's greatest Royal Rumble of all time, you know, pay per view event.
Yeah.
A few months ago, that was probably the last time they won something, which was the trophy. I'm trying to think what other matches before the big ones. Well, I guess I'll go. There was what? Who fought? Was Naomi in that match?
No, I don't think any women fought in this one.
Wasn't there? I think it was one woman match.
Oh yeah, there was. Actually, Bayley defeated Naomi. Yeah,
Bayley defeated Naomi. Yeah. And then you got Brock Lesnar, which. Man, I knew Brock Lesnar was going to beat him. He was going to squash him. But I think he beat him, like, in 1 minute.
Yeah, 1 minute, 30 seconds.
Oh, my goodness, yo. WWE have no love for the brothers, man. Kofi Kingston, 9 seconds. And then Ricochet.
Ricochet is a brother?
Yeah, Ricochet is a brother.
He is? Oh, I didn't even know.
What do you think? What do you think he was?
I thought he was like Italian or something, or you know.
I mean, he could be. I think he's biracial, but.
Oh, I didn't even know. I've heard of this.
Well, that's what we do on Sports with Religion. We do breaking news, even news that people didn't think they needed to know. You know, that's what we do. Sports and entertainment, everything else. This would fall under the everything. Well, I guess it would be sports, entertainment, and everything else in this topic. It's all of the above. But I digress. What other matches was there? But yeah, I mean, he loses. I mean, everybody else, all those high flying guys, because Brock Lesnar, in recent history, he's gotten his butt kicked in the match by small guys like Daniel Bryan, Seth Rollins. Well, Seth Rollins is the guy who actually defeat him, but the small guys like Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, those guys, they give him a run for his money until he eventually beats them in the match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Seth Rollins is the only guy who actually beat him, period, you know, as a smaller guy. And Seth Rollins did it at WrestleMania and SummerSlam, respectively, what was it, last year? So, but geez, Kofi and Ricochet, man, they weren't even in the match. Brock, the matches, their matches were even shorter than Brock Lesnar's entrance. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, wow.
Like, come on.
Before I didn't see it, but man.
Before he even hops into the ring and have the pyrotechnics, you know, fly out of the turnbuckles, the match is already over. Like, come on. It's ridiculous, man. And then Becky Lynch defeated Asuka, I think.
No, wait,
I'm talking about. No, Becky Lynch didn't
Super
fight.
Showdown?
No, she didn't fight Super Showdown. There was only that one woman match. My fault. That WrestleMania, she's fighting Shayna Baszler.
Yeah.
That goes to what I was saying. Goldberg defeats Bray Wyatt. Which I didn't see that happening. I mean, thinking WWE sense, it makes a lot of sense for them to do that because they want the shock factor of Goldberg at the age of 50-something years old or 50 years old winning the title. But they just did that already. Like, he defeated Brock Lesnar. Like, to me, for him to beat Bray Wyatt, it didn't make any sense to me. But I guess they just did it so he could face Roman Reigns for the title at WrestleMania. And they basically robbed the opportunity from Bray Wyatt, which didn't make any sense to me. And Bray Wyatt gets, you know, whatchamacallit, he gets squashed yet again. So now it sets up Cena, a rematch, a WrestleMania rematch between Cena and Bray Wyatt, which now Wyatt has the chance to redeem himself.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting that, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be Cena and Wyatt at WrestleMania. I thought it would have been Wyatt and I'm forgetting his name now.
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns. There you go.
Yeah,
that was gonna be the match.
That was the plan the whole time, and then apparently Vince McMahon changed his mind and went with Goldberg versus Roman Reigns. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's an interesting WrestleMania matchup. I mean, it's definitely a WrestleMania dream match. You know, seeing those two guys who does the spear battle it out. But the whole, you know, the whole switcheroo with the title is just, I don't know. Especially with Wyatt, this is Wyatt's second title reign, and he had already had a horrible WrestleMania, title reign a few years ago when he won the title a few years back at the Elimination Chamber. I mean, this is his chance to, I guess, redeem himself. And apparently,
mm-hmm.
Wyatt went on the internet and was saying that, I think it was on Twitter or Instagram, he was basically saying that, you know, it's a circle. You know, it's a circle, like, he's right where he needs to be. Now he has a chance to, face John Cena and apparently redeem himself, because his first WrestleMania he fought John Cena. I think his first one was Undertaker, and he fought Cena. I can't, it was one of the two. But basically, him losing to Cena killed all his momentum that first time around, which, you know, has historically happened with Cena, with a few exceptions of recent history when, you know, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk defeated him, and then Kevin Owens. But prior to that, you know, John Cena, when John Cena's in a match, whether it's Wade Barrett or Sheamus or somebody like that, if he's in a match with you, you might as well just take the L and not complain about it like Wilder did in the boxing match.
Yeah, wow.
But, yeah, I think, I know this is not WrestleMania predictions time, but as of right now, I think Wyatt's going to redeem himself, or it's going to be pointless for him to take two L's to Cena at WrestleMania.
Yeah, well, I actually think he may win, but, you know,
yeah,
I'm not going to make my prediction until a month from now or so. So, but I think White might win that.
Yeah, I agree with that. But a lot can happen from now until, you know, April 5th. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. But you have anything you'd like to say?
No, just thanks for having me on the show, and I'll see you guys next week here on Sports Urban Legend.
All right, you heard the guy. Check out iMac. You know, it's on Podbean now. Check it out, all new episodes. And check out Sports Urban Legend every Saturdays at 11. And, of course, check out Sports Urban Legend TV on YouTube. So, he's McCauley Matthew. I'm William Ramo, and I'll see you guys next week. Peace.